Hello and welcome to the Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology's presentation of The Intricate Web of Hormone Relationships. Hormones are complicated and their relationships are very entwined, and we're going to use this presentation to give you an overview of how all of those relationships fit together. So as we delve more deeply later on into the specific hormones and the specific families, that you'll have a much broader overview of what's going on. So before we begin, let's just make sure that you're aware that any of the information I'm presenting here is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional, and it's also not medical advice. And when you're presenting to your clients, you need to be really careful and make sure that they are aware that what you're presenting and what I'm presenting here today is intended as a sharing of my knowledge, information, clinical research, and clinical experience over many years. I encourage you, and you should encourage your clients, to make their own healthcare decisions based upon your research and in partnership with a qualified healthcare professional. This is especially true for folks who are on any medications. Just want to make sure that the things that we talk about in terms of nutrition are not going to interfere with the protocols. So let's get started. I like to look at hormones in pairs. And not all of them have a paired counterpart, but when we look at pairs, what we often see is that one of the pairs will increase the function of the gland and the other one will decrease it. So let's take a look at some of the most common ones. Insulin and glucagon. Insulin and glucagon are the blood sugar handling hormones. Insulin is secreted when the blood sugar gets elevated after a meal or after stress or sometimes after exercise, and the blood sugar needs to be put back into the cells. So insulin gets secreted. Its job is to keep the blood sugar back at the normal range. Glucagon is partners in crime with insulin. When the blood sugar starts to get too low, for any number of reasons, glucagon steps in and causes stored glucose in the form of glycogen, usually stored in the liver or in the muscles, to be released so that the blood sugar then goes up. When these guys are both functioning properly, the blood sugar stays in a very healthy, ideal range. Sometimes the blood sugar gets too low when there's too much insulin secreted as a result of a very high carbohydrate load. And sometimes glucagon can overshoot the mark and release too much sugar. And so you end up with this yo-yoing back and forth. And when we do our blood sugar balancing module, you'll get into all the little details behind the scenes of how insulin and glucagon work in concert with many other hormones to keep the sugar balanced. So cortisol and DHEA are also somewhat opposite, not in the same exact way as insulin and glucagon. Cortisol is released from the adrenal cortex when there's stress, whether it's a physiologic stress, whether it's a psychological stress, whether it's a perceived stress or a real stress. Cortisol gets involved, creates all the different chemistry that is required to get you running away from tigers and keep yourself safe. And it's secreted in the times of stress. DHEA, on the other hand, is secreted when the cortisol levels go down. DHEA is responsible for growth and repair and all of the kind of good maintenance functions that get shut off when cortisol is in the system. So DHEA also has the effect of inhibiting cortisol, which can be a good thing. So the cortisol goes down, the DHEA goes up, DHEA inhibits cortisol until the next big stressor, keeps everything in good balance. The intricacies come here when we start to supplement and try to support people in adrenal stress. And if you overdo the DHEA or you overdo some of the cortisol releasing factor, herbs and nutrients, you can get into trouble. So we'll talk way more in detail about that in our adrenal module. Leptin and ghrelin are in charge of appetite and fat burning. So leptin is actually a hormone that's secreted by the fat cells. So interestingly enough, the fat cells are actually endocrine glands. So when the fat cells get nice and plump and juicy and they don't need any more nutrients or storage coming in, leptin gets released to say, hey, shut off the appetite. We don't need to eat anymore. Ghrelin, on the other hand, is secreted by the lining of the stomach, and it gets secreted during times of hunger. So when the blood sugar starts to drop and the stomach is empty, ghrelin gets secreted. Ghrelin stimulates appetite, says, hey, hello, eat, we're low. Cool part about ghrelin is it also stimulates growth hormone, because growth hormone helps us to release fat from stored tissue and also is good for repair and muscle building. So it's a really actually a good thing for people to be hungry for a little while before it becomes emergency. So leptin and ghrelin work in concert with each other. We'll go way more into those when we do the blood sugar module. Estrogen and progesterone are female hormones. Estrogen is what's called a proliferative hormone. It causes the uterine or the breast tissue to enlarge and engorge. It causes extra fat to be stored around the middle, which is good during pregnancy, but not so good at other times. Progesterone is an anti-proliferative, more of a protective hormone. So when progesterone levels get low and estrogen levels get high, we end up with an imbalance that can predispose a person to more of a cancer, proliferative cancers, meaning of the hormone secreting areas like breast tissue and uterus. We'll talk way more about that when we get to the reproductive hormone module. Testosterone and DHEA are actually androgens. So they are not opposite each other. They are actually intertwined by one being able to be converted into the other. They're both male hormones, but females need to have good amounts of these. Not the large amounts that males have, but decent amounts. So DHEA can be converted into testosterone. And then testosterone can actually be converted into estrogen. And we'll go into all of the intricacies of those when we do our reproductive module as well. And finally, on my list of important hormone pairs is growth hormone and somatostatin. Growth hormone stimulates fat burning and lean muscle storage. So it's really important for athletes or when you're exercising. So it's really important that you do things to support growth hormone. And we talk a lot about that in our blood sugar managing module. Somatostatin actually opposes growth hormone. It basically turns off growth hormone. So when growth hormone gets too high, somatostatin says, okay, stop. So we'll go into all of these in much more detail as we progress through our course. So let's take a look at hormone families. In looking at the way hormones were grouped together and their functions, I decided that they were really like families that needed to work in concert with each other, that needed to communicate well with each other, and to support each other. So let's look at some of those families, and then we'll look more detail at what hormones are in there. Metabolic rate hormones, those are the ones that support the how fast your cells burn oxygen, and those are generally thyroid-related hormones. Blood sugar balancing keeps the blood sugar nice and steady, so all the cells in the body have plenty of sugar to support themselves. Those are the ones we've talked briefly about already. There's a lot that are involved in blood sugar balancing, including insulin and glucagon, but also including ghrelin and leptin and cortisol and thyroid hormone. Appetite and digestion. Most people don't think about digestive tract as an endocrine gland, but the digestive tract secretes lots of endocrine hormones, and we'll go through what some of those are. So digestion is actually controlled by the endocrine system. Stress hormones, those are the hormones secreted by the adrenal glands to protect you from threats to your life. Those would be adrenaline, cortisol, DHEA. sex and reproduction. We've mentioned a few of those already: estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, but there are more. There's oxytocin, there's prolactin, there's other hormones involved in sex and reproduction. Sleep, thoughts, and emotions. There are hormones that control how we think and breathe and how well we can sleep. And some of those would be melatonin, but also growth hormone, cortisol, adrenaline. There's a lot of hormones that are involved in sleep. And some of these family members overlap from one family to the other. It's kind of like if you think about cousins, right? Whereas you might be in a family with one cousin, you might be in another family with another cousin because they come from different lineage. Then there's organ functions. There's a family of hormones that control organ functions. There's hormones in the cardiovascular system. There's hormones that control the kidney. There's hormones that control the lungs. So general organ functions is where I leave it. So let's look at how those hormone families interact with each other. This slide shows some of the interactions, but not all, because it would have gotten so crowded with arrows that it would become just totally not able to be understood. But stress affects sleep, right? If you're under stress and you're secreting cortisol and adrenaline, you're not going to be able to fall asleep real well. Stress and appetite are interconnected. If you're under stress, your digestive tract turns off and you don't digest your food real well. If you're eating foods and have leaky gut and you've got some microbes in your gut, the digestive tract affects your stress response. Appetite and digestion affect blood sugar, how much you're eating at any point in time. What are you eating? Are you eating high glycemic foods or foods that maintain steady blood sugar? Sleep and organs. Certain organs are going to affect how well you sleep. If you've got problems with, you know, cardiovascular or kidney, that can interrupt your sleep. Metabolic rate, organs, and blood sugar, all connected, right? Thyroid, adrenal, and insulin. And when those things are not working properly, then your metabolic rate is going to be disrupted. Okay? Your blood sugars are going to be disrupted. If your blood sugars are out of whack, your metabolic rate gets messed up. And all the organs are involved with that as well. Metabolic rate totally affects blood sugar, as does blood sugar totally affect metabolic rate, thyroid, and your insulin. And we'll go into way more detail on these as we progress through the program. This is just to give you an overview. Reproduction. So thyroid and estrogen, super connected. And when you have problems with your thyroid, you can have problems with fertility. And metabolic rate. If the metabolic rate is low and the thyroid is low, you're not going to be able to produce and mature the eggs and sperm as well. Sleep and reproduction. Well, progesterone actually helps to induce sleep, and shortages of progesterone will contribute to insomnia. And problems with, so it goes both ways, basically. Sleep affects your stress response. I'm just going to add all these in. Stress and the organs. Sleep and the organs affects growth and repair of the organs, and then they're not going to function as well. So those are the families, and now we're going to go into a little bit about each of the families, but know that when we get to the particular topics, the particular modules, we'll have an entire module devoted to each of the hormone families. So who are the hormones in charge of metabolic rate? Well, the main ones are the thyroid hormones. So if you see over on the left-hand side here, we've got the thyroid, and it produces hormones called T3 and T4 that directly attach to the metabolic receptors or the thyroid receptors on each of your cells and each of your client's cells and affects the oxygen uptake, the rate of metabolism of those cells. The thyroid is stimulated by the pituitary gland, the anterior part of the pituitary, and the anterior part of the pituitary also stimulates the adrenals and the gonads. So when you've got impaired functioning up at the pituitary level, sometimes as a result of overstimulation under stress, you can get impact the adrenals and the gonads. Okay. There's also metabolic rate is affected by the small intestine, and it's also affected by glucagon and insulin. If you don't get the blood sugar managed, if the blood sugar is up and down all over the place, the thyroid suffers. And we'll go into way more detail about that later. So let's look a little bit about a little bit more closely. This is just a reference chart. Know that we will go into all of these in way more detail in the thyroid module. We've got thyroxin and free T4, which are it's basically T4 either in the free or the protein bound state. We'll learn more about what that means later on. They convert to the active form, which is T3, and that's what stimulates your cells. So T3, triiodothyronine, and free T3 are things you would measure on a blood test, and they have the most profound effect on increasing metabolic rate. Thyroid-stimulating hormone, TSH, is what stimulates, it comes from the anterior pituitary, and it stimulates the release of T4, mostly T4. A little bit of T3 is produced by the thyroid, but it's mostly T4. TRH, thyrotropin-releasing factor, is produced by the hypothalamus, and that stimulates the release of TSH. We've got reverse T3, which is produced from T4. T4 is either converted to T3 or reverse T3. It's converted to reverse T3 when you're overstimulated, and when there's a shortage of the nutrients like iodine and selenium that support the conversion from T4 to T3. Insulin is secreted by the pancreas, the islet cells, and that enhances the uptake of glucose into your cells and the subsequent ATP production. Next, we have epinephrine, which is secreted by the adrenal gland, and that enhances metabolic rate and also insulin. And then cortisol, which is secreted by the adrenal cortex, and that enhances the release of stored sugar and supplies additional fuel to cells. So you can see, while the thyroid is the primary player in the metabolic rate hormone family, there are other hormones and interactions that are very important for controlling metabolic rate. There's your thyroid. Your thyroid has an effect on everything. The GI tract, the gallbladder, the liver, lipids, that's blood, fats, protein, glucose, red blood cells, hormones, other hormones, bone, cardiovascular system, and brain. When the thyroid is not working properly, everything suffers. Everything slows down. And that's why there's such a wide variety of symptoms that you're going to see in someone with a problematic thyroid. And it can mimic, it can be confusing, because somebody's presenting with end organ or other gland dysfunction. And sometimes it can be confusing to track it down to the thyroid. Typically, we're going to learn about some blood tests that you can do, but also some functional tests that a person can do at home to isolate whether the thyroid is at the seat of their problems. The thyroid has an effect on the citric acid cycle, and we're going to learn more about the citric acid cycle in our cellular metabolism module. So there's a lot of nutrients that are important for producing energy. So it's thyroid function and then the actual mitochondrial function that are important for metabolic rate. So I couldn't help but put this in there. We'll go way more into detail on that in our cell metabolism and energy production module. Thyroid control, how does it get controlled? Well, your hypothalamus secretes a releasing factor, thyrotropic releasing TRH, and it stimulates the anterior pituitary. The pituitary then stimulates the thyroid by producing TSH, thyroid-stimulating hormone, that circulates in the bloodstream, makes its way to the thyroid, and the thyroid says, oh, I'm getting a kick in the pants. I need to speed up. I need to make more T4 generally, sometimes a little bit of T3, but mostly T4. And then it produces that, and then there's a negative feedback loop, which is very common in endocrinology, very common in hormone control. there's a stimulating hormone, stimulates a gland. The gland then makes more of that hormone, and that extra level of that hormone in the blood causes that stimulating hormone level to go down. So in this case, when the thyroid says, hey, okay, I'll make some more T4, if it does that, the pituitary says, great, and it slows its level down. When the thyroid is sluggish or it's missing some nutrients and it can't do that, what happens is it doesn't produce any more. So the anterior pituitary produces even more TSH and the thyroid isn't producing much more. And the anterior keeps producing until the TSH levels go very high. They may kick the thyroid hormones into normal range. But when you see the TSH being very high and the thyroid hormone being normal, that means that the pituitary has had to kick that thyroid really hard. And it means that there's something wrong. You don't want to wait until the T3 and the T4 are out of balance before you take action to help your client restore function. So let's now look at blood sugar balancing hormone family. There's a bunch in here as well. Again, there's some that are secreted by the pancreas, the main seat of blood sugar balancing, but there's a lot of interaction with the other parts. So insulin is the main blood sugar balancing hormone that we know about, secreted by the pancreas, the beta cells in the pancreas, and it stimulates uptake of glucose into the cells. It basically stimulates receptors on the cells that say, hey, I've got some sugar, let me go in. As a result of proper insulin production and proper cell receptors, what's going to happen is the blood glucose is going to reduce, which is going to decrease the stimulation to the pancreas so it doesn't produce more insulin until the blood sugar levels get high again. Glucagon is also secreted by the pancreas and the alpha cells, and it stimulates glucose release from glucagon or from glycogen and synthesis from amino acids and fats. So your body can create energy, create glucose from some of the amino acids and from fats. And glucagon's job is to find storage. And if it can't find storage, then it finds it from amino acids and fat. It's stimulated when the blood sugar gets too low. And it's suppressed when the blood sugar goes back up to a normal level. Somatostatin is a hormone that's secreted in the stomach and the intestine and the pancreas, and it suppresses the release of glucagon and insulin, gastric hormones, growth hormone, and prolactin. We'll go into way more detail about somatostatin when we look at the digestive tract. Growth hormone is secreted by the anterior pituitary, and it can antagonize insulin. So growth hormone and insulin don't like to play together. And vice versa, insulin antagonizes growth hormone. So a surge of growth hormone, say that's when people take shots of growth hormone and it's excessively large, it can antagonize insulin. What usually happens is the levels of insulin are powerful enough that they suppress growth hormone. Epinephrine or adrenaline, produced by the adrenal medulla, enhances the release of glucose from glycogen and fat. So adrenaline gets in there when there's kind of an emergency. So it's a quick need for extra glucose, like when there's a tiger chasing you. And it's not sufficient to just ask the glucagon to go and get rid of the stored starches as glycogen. So that comes in when there's more of an emergency need for extra blood glucose. And it's not necessarily just when the blood glucose is low, whereas glucagon just comes in when the blood glucose goes too low. Adrenaline will step in when there's an emergency. Even if the blood glucose is normal, it wants to help get the blood glucose much higher. Cortisol, its effect on blood sugar, it's produced from the adrenal cortex. And when you're under an emergency situation, the cortisol is going around and finding storage. It, on the other hand, likes to find storage in the muscle. Cortisol is best at breaking down muscle in a process called gluconeogenesis to help increase the glucose versus glucagon, which usually goes to the stored glycogen, and adrenaline, which usually goes towards the fat storage. There's overlap between these functions. So cortisol, adrenaline, and glucagon all help to bring the blood sugar up, usually in different ways, but sometimes there's some overlap. Thyroxin, T4, is important in blood sugar managing because it enhances the release of glucose from glycogen and absorption of sugar from the intestine. So it helps to increase the metabolic rate and is looking for places where it can increase the energy to the cells so that then they can use oxygen better and create more energy. ACTH, adrenal corticotropic hormone, is produced by the anterior pituitary, and it's the adrenal stimulating hormone, which enhances the release of cortisol and fatty acids from adipose tissue. And then incretin, which is one that most people have never heard of, is secreted by the small intestine, and it increases the insulin even before glucose enters the bloodstream. So incretin's job is to basically forewarn the pancreas that, hey, there's about to be a surge of glucose into the bloodstream because there's food in the small intestine. And that increases the level of insulin, almost like giving it a head start. So again, this is everything involved in blood sugar balancing. So I'm giving you all of this, and we'll go in way more detail when we get to the blood sugar balancing part of the program. But this is to give you an understanding of that it's not a simple process. For some people it is, but it's giving you the background so that when things aren't going the way you should in terms of balancing the blood sugar, you know there's other places to look. So the interaction between thyroid and glucose, we go into way more detail about this in our blood sugar and our thyroid modules, but basically in a nutshell, thyroid dysfunction causes a decreased rate of glucose uptake by the cells, a decreased rate of glucose absorption from the gut, a slower response in insulin to elevated blood sugar. It means it takes longer to get the blood sugar into the cells, and a slower clearance of insulin from the blood, which means that the person is subject to the negative side effects of insulin, which we'll go through in way more detail later. Let's now look at insulin and glucagon imbalance. When you have a fluctuating blood sugar, it can weaken and imbalance a lot of different parts of the body, including gut, lungs, brain, hormone levels, adrenal glands, detoxification pathways. And did I say blood vessels as well? We've talked about that before. We go into way more detail in the blood sugar balancing program. But what this leads to is impairment of metabolism, weakened thyroid function. And as long as the blood sugar is dysregulating, whatever you do to fix the thyroid isn't going to work. That's why when we look at our hierarchy, we look at blood sugar problems. We look at blood sugar problems before we look at thyroid. We look at digestion before we look at blood sugar balance, because we want to make sure that the foundations are working. So what should happen? You eat food, you make insulin, the cells resist insulin if there's too much. When we have an excess of sugar and carbohydrates in the diet, causes the sugar to get stored as fat. Person feels tired and hungry shortly after eating, and then they eat again. And the vicious cycle continues. And when we do our blood sugar balancing module, you're going to learn how to step in and intervene here. So let's do a quick look at the appetite and digestion hormone family. And when we do our digestion module, we'll go into way more details. As I said before, leptin is produced by the fat cells and stimulates satiety, whereas ghrelin is stimulated by the stomach lining or secreted by the stomach lining and signals hunger. Gastrin is secreted by the stomach itself as soon as food hits it to increase the production of stomach acid. Cholecystokinin, which is secreted by the small intestine, stimulates the production of pancreatic juices, so that it helps to digest the food that's about to go down in there. As soon as the food hits the small intestine, cholecystokinin gets secreted and says, hey, pancreas, we need some enzymes. Hey, gallbladder, give us some bile. Secretin is secreted by the duodenum, the upper part of the small intestine, and it stimulates bicarbonate production by the pancreas and bile production by the liver and pepsin by the stomach. So it's got a very wide range of functions. It's also secreted by the stomach, I believe. It stimulates bicarbonate because the food that's in the stomach, which is no longer food. It's really called chyme. It's like this mass, like a smoothie consistency. It's very acidic in the stomach so that the protein digestion can begin. When it goes into the small intestine, it needs to be more alkaline so the digestive enzymes can work on it. So the job of the pancreas and the gallbladder is to start to produce the bicarbonate. Then we have peptide YY, mainly secreted by the ileum and colon, but a little bit in other parts of the GI tract. And it basically inhibits gastric motility, the stomach. So we don't need it anymore because food's already down in the small intestine. Increases water and electrolyte absorption in the colon to keep the feces the right consistency. It can suppress the pancreatic secretion, so we don't need to be secreting pancreatic enzymes once the food's been digested, and increases the efficiency of digestion. Again, we'll go through all of these in more detail later. Incretins include two categories of hormones, gastric inhibitory peptides and glucagon-like peptides. They are secreted in the small intestine. And the role is to increase the insulin, inhibit glucagon, slow the rate of absorption of nutrients by reducing gastric emptying. So we have a nice steady influx instead of a rapid influx. Somatostatin is secreted by the stomach, the intestine, and the pancreas, inhibits gastrin, CCK, secretin, GIP, and growth hormone, TSH, glucagon, and insulin. So it's basically an inhibitory hormone that turns everything down when it's no longer needed. Dopamine is secreted by the brain and the GI mucosa. Most people don't realize that dopamine, in addition to being a neurotransmitter in the brain and affecting mood, it also affects gut motility. And it protects the mucosa. And the same thing with serotonin, which is a very important brain neurotransmitter. So there's a picture of an overview of the endocrinology of digestion. And this is just a preview of what you have to come. And we'll go into way more detail about how all this works when we do our digestive module. So let's take a look at the stress hormone family. We generally think of this as the adrenals. And yes, the adrenals are the star of the show when it comes to stress. No doubt about it. Adrenaline is secreted by the adrenal medulla. We'll go into way more detail about the anatomy and where things are secreted when we get to our stress adrenal module. And it allows fight flight, increases heart rate, pulse, pressure. It's that feeling you get when you feel stressed, like that sudden palms that are sweaty and the heart rate increases and the blood pressure increases. You might feel pressure in your head. Cortisol is from the adrenal cortex, and it's more of the longer acting, slower to get into the picture hormone in the picture of stress. Adrenaline just lasts very quickly, in and out, and the cortisol comes in and picks up the slack. It stimulates glucose release from glycogen, amino acids, and fats so that you can increase the blood sugar so you can shunt energy to the extremities so you can run and fight. Which is why one of the things I recommend to people when they get into a stressful situation and they're sitting at their desk, what they want to do is get up and move and get rid of all that extra glucose in the blood. Go for a walk around the block. Do some squats. Do some jogging in place, whatever it takes. Aldosterone is secreted by the adrenal cortex, and it aids in the retention of fluid and electrolytes, conserves sodium, and secretes potassium. So that gets increased when you're under stress, so you have more fluids and electrolytes. And then when the adrenals are burned out, the aldosterone levels go low, and people tend to pee out their electrolytes. DHEA, again, secreted by the adrenal cortex, is a precursor to both male and female hormones, important for muscle growth and repair. And the importance of it in stress, it's not really a player in protecting you from stress, but it gets disrupted by stress because the excess cortisol causes an inhibition of DHEA. Norepinephrine is similar to epinephrine or adrenaline, also secreted by the adrenal medulla. It causes that sympathetic response, sharpens focus, and antagonizes insulin and stimulates gluconeogenesis. So the adrenaline and norepinephrine work together. Thyroxine, very important for stress because it increases the metabolic rate. You have a decreased function of T4 with high amounts of stress because it's inhibitory. And then finally, ACTH, which we've mentioned before, produced by the anterior pituitary and increases the release of cortisol and fatty acids from adipose tissue. So here's a look at the adrenals. Again, we'll go into way more detail about these when we do our adrenal module. You've got the outer zone, the cortex, which produces cortisol, DHEA, and aldosterone. And then you have the inner zone, also called the medulla, which produces adrenaline, noradrenaline, and some of the androgens. Androgens being testosterone, basically sex hormones, and other androgen precursors and intermediates. This is a key chart, and we'll go into way more detail about it in both our adrenal and our sex hormone modules. But you basically have this interaction between the stress hormones and the sex hormones, and this chart basically explains why people lose their sex drive when they're under a lot of stress. So if you look up at the top, the surprising grandma of it all is cholesterol. Cholesterol is actually the precursor molecule that gets turned into pregnenolone. Needs adequate B5. And when we learn more in our adrenal protocols, you're going to see that vitamin B5, pantothenic acid, in amounts as large as 500 milligrams three times a day, is super important for restoring adrenal function because it helps with that conversion. So pregnenolone, the grandma, mom, whatever you want to call her, she gets converted into progesterone, and progesterone gets converted downstream to aldosterone. Pregnenolone also gets converted down to cortisol. So if you're under a lot of stress, the body is going to prefer to keep you alive than to help you to reproduce, to give you sex hormones, to help you have good periods. So most of this is called the pregnenolone steal, where a lot of the cortisol gets sucked down from pregnenolone, and then pregnenolone cannot be converted into progesterone and then down into DHEA, the estrogens, or the testosterones. So we'll go into way more detail about these later on. But just know when you're working with people, even now, that stress affects everything. People who have high blood pressure are frequently people who have been under a lot of stress. They may be an adrenal burnout by the time you see them, but the effects of the adrenal excess are hurting them. High blood pressure, increased heart rate, increased blood sugar leading to insulin resistance and diabetes, increased respiratory rate and shallow breathing rather than big full belly breathing. Digestive impairment, slow down of enzymes, slow down of stomach acid. Immune system issues, slow down of the immune system, or inflammation, which then leads to autoimmune problems. And then it affects thyroid receptors. It decreases the effectiveness of the thyroid receptors. Cortisol basically damages and inhibits the receptors on thyroid cells. So a lot of people you'll see will present with thyroid symptoms, but really at the heart of it is stress and adrenal dysfunction and high levels of cortisol for a long time. These are the folks that come in to see you and they say, well, I think I have thyroid problems. My doctor says I don't because all my tests came out normal. These are the people who most likely have thyroid receptor burnout as a result of stress. And when we go through our thyroid module, we're going to go through in detail all the different nutrients that come into play to bring that into balance. Our circadian rhythm, you'll hear that term a lot. And this is a chart. It's a rough estimate of the way cortisol rhythms and pulsates throughout the day. You've got your, let's start with 6 a.m., 6 to 8 a.m. It basically peaks, comes back down, and whoa. It comes back down in the late afternoon, evening, and then it's at its lowest at midnight. What you see a lot is that people have really high levels of the cortisol at 12 a.m. or in the evening when you do these tests, and that's what causes a lot of the insomnia that you're going to see. And again, just a little overview and a hint of what's to come, but the importance of stress on heart rhythm and how the interactions between the different hormone families affect each other. So this affects the way the heart beats. The top is when someone's in frustration, the heart is just erratically beating. And when they're in appreciation, you just look at that wave and you can see how calming and soothing it is. So teaching people how to do their mini vacations, their heart math, which you all know how to do. It's important. And this is just another chart that shows how stress affects the immune system. So there's an antibody called secretory IgA, which lines the digestive tract, the throat, the sinuses, the lungs. And it protects those surfaces. It protects the body from invaders. When someone goes into anger, their secretory IgA levels drop for many hours afterwards. That's here, right? And that means that they're at more risk of immune problems, diseases, picking up the latest bug that's going around. So when they do 5 minutes of care, they actually have a little bit of an increase in the IgA during the process of where they're in their 5 minutes. And then it drops back down, but it raises up again and stays in an increased position for many hours thereafter. So let's take a look at our sleep hormone family, because a lot of people you're going to see are going to be having problems with sleep. And those hormones include melatonin, secreted by the pineal, which promotes deep sleep and also supports the immune system. We find that people with low levels of melatonin are at higher risk for breast cancer. Growth hormone, we talked about that a little bit before, produced by the posterior pituitary. It peaks about an hour after a person falls asleep for the night and promotes growth and repair and fat burning. Cortisol, produced by the adrenal cortex, high levels of it disrupt sleep. So if somebody's stressed, if they're watching a movie, you know, one of these shoot 'em up, bang 'em up things right before they go to bed, or even if they're just watching any kind of TV right before bed, the light going into their brain not only inhibits melatonin, but it also stimulates some stress. Eating right before bed can do the same thing. Leptin has a very specific peak and valley that we'll talk about when we talk about blood sugar, and it's produced by the fat cells, but it's supposed to peak right in the middle of the night to promote fat burning. But if someone's not getting adequate sleep, they're getting to bed too late, they're interfering with their hormone levels by eating too close to bedtime, the leptin doesn't peak in the middle of the night and the fat burning doesn't happen. So you know as well as I, there are a lot of people out there who are trying really hard to drop weight and it's just not happening because of these hormone imbalances. Progesterone promotes sleep. A lot of times folks are given some progesterone at bedtime to help them fall into a deeper sleep. Estrogen, on the other hand, doesn't promote the sleep, but it will improve the quality of the sleep. Testosterone is impacted by sleep. So if a person has been deprived of sleep, the levels of testosterone are going to go lower. With insulin disrupts growth hormone and the sleep pattern. So if someone eats within 3 hours of going to bed and stimulates an insulin rise, that peak of growth hormone doesn't happen. And finally, glucagon is important during sleep because it helps to keep the blood sugar steady while the person is sleeping, while you're sleeping. So in terms of how all this works together, we go through a lot more detail about sleep. We have a whole section of sleep in our blood sugar balancing module because it's so, so important and so disrupted by blood sugar imbalance. So we talked about these hormones, insulin, glucagon, cortisol, DHEA, growth hormone, leptin and ghrelin, melatonin, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. These are all important to help a person have a good night's sleep. Let's look briefly at the reproductive hormone family. We've got pregnenolone, which, as we talked about, is the way at the top, the mama or the grandma of them all, produced by the adrenal cortex, and it's the precursor to everything, including the stress hormones. Progesterone is produced by the ovaries, but also small amounts by the adrenal cortex, is important for the buildup of the lining of the uterus. So every month when a person is right before their period, the progesterone levels rise and it thickens the lining in preparation for a fetus to implant. It also protects from estrogen. When we go into that, the module, we'll talk about estrogen receptors and the different kinds and how progesterone can protect against the damaging effects of estrogen when there's sufficient. Estrogen, produced again like progesterone, at the ovaries and adrenal cortex, responsible for female traits, proliferation of breasts, and ovulation. So when the breasts get bigger towards the middle to the end of the cycle, it's estrogen. And when the estrogen levels drop, the breasts go back to normal. Also, estrogen stimulates ovulation. Testosterone is important. It's produced in the testes in the male and in the adrenal cortex in both male and female. And so females have small levels of testosterone, but stress is going to impact especially a female's levels of testosterone because there's only one place where it's produced. So it's responsible for male traits, but also in females, it's responsible for being able to build muscle when doing a lot of heavy duty exercise. And it's responsible for sex drive. FSH and LH are secreted by the anterior pituitary, and they're responsible basically for stimulating the sex organs. So in females, FSH stimulates the follicle to mature and sperm to mature in males, whereas LH triggers ovulation in females and triggers the production of testosterone in males. GnRH, gonadotropin releasing hormone secreted by the hypothalamus, is intended to stimulate the anterior pituitary to produce LH and FSH. And again, all of these are in a negative feedback loop, meaning when the levels go up, the releasing hormone goes down. Thyroid hormone is involved in the maturation of the egg and the metabolic rate of all of the systems, all of the glands, all of the parts, the body parts involved in reproduction. Cortisol is involved in reproduction in that excess cortisol depletes all the precursors. And we have another chart we'll look at about that. HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin, is produced by the embryo and it feeds back to the body, hey, keep up the levels of progesterone. There's a baby growing here. And when there's problems in pregnancy and miscarriage, there could be a problem with the body's ability or the fetus's ability to make the HCG, or it could be a problem with the body perceiving the right levels of HCG. Prolactin, posterior pituitary, produces it, and it's responsible for lactation, for milk production. Oxytocin, on the other hand, also from the posterior pituitary, is responsible for milk letdown, uterine contraction, so real important during delivery of the baby, and the synthetic pitocin is a synthetic oxytocin that helps stimulate labor, and that's used quite frequently. But oxytocin is also important for bonding, intended for the bonding of mama to baby, but also it's really a big player in the bonding between people, so in sexual situation or sensual situation. Women in community tend to produce more oxytocin when they have that support and that nurture and that love of each other. Really important feel-good kind of hormone. Let's just look back at that same picture we looked at before and see that what's circled in orange are the sex hormones. And cholesterol is the precursor. Pregnenolone is at the top, but you could see that if cortisol, which is circled in purple, is being a hog, it's being greedy, it's stealing away some of these hormone precursors, then you're not going to make enough estrogen, testosterone, and progesterone, and also DHEA as well. And that leads to low sex drive, infertility, poor periods, painful menstruation, and a whole host of other things. So think stress, think adrenals when you're dealing with someone with who is presenting with male-female problems and sex drive deficiencies. This is just an overview picture just to show you how important nutrition is in all this metabolism. I promise you we'll go into way more detail about this later, but you can see that you've got estrone, estriol, and estradiol are your three main estrogens, E1, E2, and E3. The protective one is estriol. Estriol is the most protective. And estrone is the most problematic, but it's worse when it gets converted downstream to 4-hydroxyestrone in the absence of magnesium. So where you really want estrone to be produced is to go down to estradiol so that it can then go down to estriol and the protectives. Estrone can also be converted downstream to 2-hydroxyestrone, And that's improved by things called DIM and indole-3 carbinol, which are extracts from cruciferous vegetables or cruciferous vegetables. Exercise can help. Isoflavones from flax and soy can be helpful, although some people have problems with soy. Omega-3 fats are important, and it's important to have enough progesterone. So if you have deficiency of any or all of these in the green and an excess of the red, like pesticides, alcohol, and a high-fat diet, usually a high non-good fat diet, you know, processed fat diet, you're going to end up with less of the 2-hydroxy and more of the 4-hydroxy. So protective metabolite. And on the other hand, the estrone can go down to estradiol and do its function there, or it can go down to estrone, which can lead to another dangerous metabolite, which usually is just a quick intermediate on the path to estriol. So if someone is obese, or they have hypothyroidism, pesticides in their diet, cimetidine, which is an antacid medication, acid blocker medication, they're going to have more of the 16-hydroxy, which is dangerous. There are some tests that Meridian Valley runs that we'll go into way more detail later on that will help you to understand the ratio between the 16s and the 2s and how much of a risk a person is. In the absence of iodine, you get more of that 16-hydroxy because less is converted to estriol, which is protective. So when we look at this in more detail later, we'll look at the estrogen quotient. Your E3, which is estriol, divided by your E1 estrone plus E2, that number should be 1 or more. When it's too low, when it's below 1, you end up at high risk. So your person's at high risk. Again, we will go into way more detail about this later. I'm just giving you an overview. Just another way to look at estrogen metabolism might be slightly easier for you to see. Toxic 16s and the 4s, barbecue charred meats can create more of a metabolism towards those toxins in the environment and other things. And the protective ones, the 2-hydroxyestrone and estradiol, protective when you have enough cruciferous vegetables and some of the isoflavones from soy. When you have an increased ratio, or when your 2-16 ratio is less than 2, there's an increased cancer risk. And we'll look way more in detail about this later. Just to give you an overview of the male hormones, cholesterol gets converted to pregnenolone. This is a shortcut. A lot of the intermediates are taken out, down to DHEA. Pregnenolone also gets converted to progesterone, which has an effect and can be converted to androstenedione, down to estrone, out to testosterone, and then DHT. And you can see testosterone can also be converted to estrone. We'll look at aromatase inhibitors and things like that when we go into way more detail about this. But the point is that it's complicated, and the male hormones and the female hormones are very intertwined. The last thing I want to say is male pattern baldness is usually attributed to excess testosterone. You say men with high testosterone are more prone to male pattern baldness, but it's actually DHT, which we're supposed to have very moderate amounts of. And when that gets excessive, the men get more baldness. They may actually have less free and available testosterone and some of the symptoms that go with it, like lack of motivation and sex drive, but be bald because their testosterone is being converted downstream to DHT, which can be a dangerous metabolite as well and increases risk of prostate cancer. So again, we have a very long module about sex hormones. You will have everything you need to know. This is just an overview, so you're familiar with the terminology. Finally, let's take a look at organ-specific hormone family. We're just going to do a brief overview of these, and we'll go into more detail as appropriate in the appropriate modules. Erythropoietin, secreted by the kidney, stimulates red blood cell production. Thymusin, produced by the thymus gland, stimulates glucose release from glycogen and synthesis from amino acids and fats. Parathyroid hormone from the parathyroid glands, they actually increase your blood calcium. And calcitonin, which is opposite, is secreted by or produced by the thyroid and reduces blood calcium. So calcium, blood calcium is in a really, really tight control because it's controlled by these two hormones. ADH, antithyretic hormone, produced by the posterior pituitary, is involved with the retention of fluid. Natriuretic peptide is produced by the heart and induces release of urine. Angiotensin is produced by the liver, and it's responsible for vasoconstriction and release of aldosterone. Brain natriuretic peptide is produced by the heart and reduces blood pressure. And finally, thrombopoietin, which is produced by the liver, kidneys, and striated muscle, and that produces platelets. So all of these play in. And they are generally, you're not going to be having to look at these for most cases. But when you're dealing with really severe cases and you're trying to understand, you may be resorting to learning more about these particular hormones. So this concludes our talk on the hormone families and the relationships between the various hormones for Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology. And I am Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo.